Are we taking 531 up first?
Yes.
Is Carmen? Oh, there she is.
Yes. City Council will come back to order from recess. We have a quorum present, and we shall proceed with a resolution. Can you please read the title? Item number 531.
Authorize the transfer of the Sergeant First Class Jerome Sears Army Reserve Center to the city to implement a West Side Operations Center to ensure an effective emergency response on the west side of the Willamette River.
So when asked the question, probably one of the most important questions that any government, any layer of government, the most important question that any city government needs to answer and continuously answer is, are we ready for a natural disaster? Are we prepared to deal with things we cannot anticipate exactly when, but scientists say and historical trends say will happen? Are we prepared for an earthquake? Are we prepared for a flood? Are we prepared for the more frequent emergencies related to inclement weather? The short answer we always give is we're always seeking to be even more prepared than we are now. It is a value of continuous improvement, which also requires continuous self-examination, brutal self-examination. I have long felt, as other predecessors, other mayors have long felt, is that the answer to the question of are we prepared citywide, the answer, I think from a factual point of view, rightfully has been no. Our emergency preparedness resources are located, for the most part, on the east side of the river. And significant resources are located in the far eastern portion of Portland. We also have significant resources for emergency preparedness lying under the Fremont Bridge approaches. Fremont Bridge approaches that were built in the 1970s. So we are not prepared as well as we could be or should be for responding to a natural disaster on the west side. Today we have an opportunity to begin to do something substantial to address that deficit. And this has been something that has been on my to-do list from the day I ran for city commissioner. And what we're proposing today is to, consistent with the process that brought us to this date, consistent with one of the options that has been before us to this date, and with significant help from Commissioner Fish and from the Water Bureau, Transportation Bureau, the Bureau of Environmental Services, we have a site. For the first time in the city's recent history, we have the opportunity to pursue a site that is as close to ready to go as I could or we could possibly hope for or imagine. The old Sears Armory Center in the Hillsdale neighborhood. In my mind, reasonable people can disagree, no doubt, but in my mind, this is not a like to do. This is we have to do, and there hasn't been a better opportunity to do it in a very long time. Can you please read the title?
530, I did.
Oh, you did. Okay, then I would like to recognize Director Carmen Merlot from the Portland Office of Emergency Management that will go through the exact nature of the opportunity in front of us and the summary of the work to date to get where we are.
Thank you, Mayor. And for City Commissioners, I'm Carmen Merlot, the Director of the Portland Office of Emergency Management. I want to acknowledge first that this has been an almost four-year-long process, and it's truly been a collaborative process between the Portland Bureau of Transportation, the Portland Water Bureau, and the Office of Emergency Management. I want to quickly recap the history of this project and, more importantly, why we need this site. And so first and foremost, the city owns and maintains critical resources on the west side of the river. Right now, PBOT owns 68% of PBOT's bridges, stairways, retaining walls, including the harbor wall, are all on the west side of the Willamette River. And we know that a successful response and recovery capability depends on our ability to restore transportation and utility lifelines to both the downtown commercial economic core as well as the Northwest Industrial Center. To more specifically talk about some of the challenges we have, first, as the mayor said, we have no public works assets that are on the west side of the river. Albina Yard, Stanton Yard, Interstate Facility are all on the east side. We have no city-owned west side fueling station aside from the basement garage at First and Jefferson. And I think all of you know that the First and Jefferson garage is also limited by height capacity, so large rigs can't go down there. We currently have no west side location to perform repair and maintenance on city-owned vehicles. No west side location to store de-icing equipment. Right now, PBOT leases a facility on the east side, yet their operations are on the west side. So moving that capacity to the west side will create some efficiencies. And then finally, no alternate location for either PBOT's or the Water Bureau's incident command posts or the city's emergency coordination center. Having an alternate facility for us to coordinate during emergencies certainly would ensure that we've got some continuity of operations. So here's a visual of city-owned properties on the west side of the river, including the emergency transportation routes, and a picture of our utilities, both gas, water. Yellow triangles are the cell sites. You can see the number of infrastructure we have on the west side that needs protection. Why are we talking about this at all? Well, I think all of you know we've got some pretty severe seismic risks in the Pacific Northwest, starting first and foremost with the Cascadia subduction zone. This is a 600-mile fault located off the coast of Oregon, where the Juan de Fuca plate is subducting under the North American plate. This is a very similar scenario to what Japan experienced in March. That was also a subduction zone earthquake. They experienced 6 minutes of very heavy ground shaking. And if the Cascadia subduction zone weren't enough, we also have three crustal faults in Portland, the East Bank Fault, the Portland Hills Fault, and the Oatfield Fault. The Portland Hills Fault goes not just through right downtown Portland, but if you go further up north, right through the Northwest Industrial Area where we have all of our tank farms and is the hub for a lot of our energy infrastructure. The East Bank Fault goes through the Lloyd Center and Benson High School, among other notable facilities. So quite cause for concern. Although the primary damage from earthquakes is due to ground shaking, they also result in secondary effects. We know for sure that we'll have very many aftershocks after any earthquake, either crustal earthquake or Cascadia subduction zone. Of course, liquefaction, Portland being having very many steep hills, certainly susceptible to landslides, lateral spread, flooding, and destructive fires caused by ruptures of power lines and gas ruptures. The Portland Water Bureau principal engineer will tell you that Portland is a good place to be a pipe. And while that's true, a lot of our infrastructure was built prior to our understanding of the seismic risk in the Pacific Northwest. And so we know that if we have an event, our water, sewer, and gas lines are certainly going to be in trouble, not to mention the 15 bridges that cross both the Willamette and Columbia Rivers. And we've got 1,700 unreinforced masonry properties scattered throughout the area, but predominantly in Old Town, Downtown, Chinatown, that also we expect not to fare very well during an earthquake. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, we've got a heavy concentration of critical infrastructure, particularly in the Northwest Industrial Area, which is a hub for the Olympic pipeline, as well as electrical transmission and rail lines as well. So with all this in mind, back in 2006, we learned that the U.S. Army was decommissioning two properties in Portland, one on the east side and one on the west side. And the Portland Water Bureau, Bureau of Transportation, and POEM were one of six applicants that submitted a notice of interest to the U.S. Department of Defense. Throughout 2007 and 2008, there was a very extensive public engagement process where four public meetings were convened, and at the June 2008 council hearing, all six parties made presentations to City Council. Ultimately, in July of 2008, City Council made a recommendation that the Sears facility be awarded for affordable housing, but affirmed the need for a Westside Emergency Operations Center and directed PBOT, the Water Bureau, and POEM to go out and look for alternate sites. So we came up with a selection criteria for the kinds of sites that would be ideal locations. We agreed that we wanted a property that was not less than 3 to 5 acres with sufficient capacity for covered storage. A lot of the equipment and chemicals that are needed for de-icing have to be temperature sensitive, so they have to be in covered storage. We wanted a place that was easily accessible both to the freeway as well as major and minor emergency transportation routes. It had to be on flat ground with flat access to roads. And then finally, vulnerability. We wanted a site that was out of the floodplain, out of any wildfire hazard area, and away from steep slopes. So we began a GIS search, and I think we had at one time a yield of about 369 parcels. From there, staff reviewed them and put them into three categories, and the first category being the most desirable. We ended up with 148 properties that we then vetted through the categories that I mentioned previously. And from those sites, six stood out as either exceeding or meeting the criteria that we had set up. And these are the six sites, and I'll show you a photo of each of those. So starting with the property at 2615 Northwest Industrial Street, this Christmas tree lot you might recognize as the BES facility in Giles Lake, and we did consider this as an option at one time. The next property you also recognize is right next door. This is the Oregonian property. This is a facility literally at the corner of Highway 26 and 217 in Beaverton. Another one in Beaverton. This is close to the downtown Beaverton Library. This one on Beaverton-Hillsdale Highway, which is very close to Jesuit High School. And then finally, one also out in the Northwest Industrial Area, this one near the police forfeiture area, way out on Highway 30. So for a multitude of reasons, these sites were crossed off the list, whether it was because of not good access, too far from the downtown core, not in the city of Portland limits. This one in particular was near very steep slopes and susceptible to landslides.
What was the matter with the one at the BES property?
Not all of it was available for use. We only had access to a very small portion. They're currently leasing most of the property to, and I forget who the people they're leasing it to, but not all of it was available, and only a piece of it would have been available to us for leasing.
Eventual, if we wanted to buy it or lease it long term, we'd have to pay full market value because it was purchased with ratepayer dollars and it has bond requirements attached to it.
So in addition to those six sites, we also followed up and looked at some parks properties, both in Northwest and Southwest, other industrial properties, leads from the public and other bureaus, and finally recommendations from commercial realtors. The reality is there really are not that many parcels out there that match our criteria that either are available for lease or own and that we felt would be a good fit for the uses we intended to put on the property. So here we are back to the Jerome Sears facility at 2730 Southwest Multnomah Boulevard. I'll give you a quick scan of the buildings on the property. The main building is a two-story, 24,000-square-foot administrative building, which has an assembly hall, a two-story assembly hall in the rear. Next to that is a covered shed area, and all the way to the rear is a maintenance shop. It's got parking facility for over 100 vehicles, in the main lot, and then additional capacity in the rear for, at that time, military equipment. There are underground storage tanks already at the site. I do believe they've been decommissioned.
Carmen, can you go back to that picture for a second?
Yes, please.
The building to the, I guess it's to the east, furthest to the east, am I right? Right to left?
Sure.
Is that the gym?
The building in the back is the gym. The one to the side is a covered storage area.
Okay, so the one in the back is the currently the functioning gym.
Right.
All right, thank you.
So do we know about the underground storage tanks? Have we done soil testing? Is it a brownfield or?
No, there has been an environmental assessment done, and there's been a finding of no significant impact, and they did take a look at the underground storage tanks.
And would you be planning to use them as a fueling station?
We wouldn't use that one. The main 10,000-gallon underground storage tank is literally in the middle of the grassy area in the building. That's not where we would site it. We would opt to put, and I believe John Hunt is here from Fleet, we would prefer to put an above-ground tank, not an underground tank, if we sited a fueling station there.
Why would we do that rather than using the Shell station down the street?
It's not, the Shell station isn't city-owned. May not be open to us for use during after-hours use.
Can we get a partnership with them, a partnership agreement with them?
I'm sure we could. I think we also want the ability to have our own city-owned facility for our own maintenance vehicles, aside from any secondary benefit from a partnership with Shell or any other stations. And John, hi.
So how big of a fueling tank above ground are we talking about?
We're looking at, and we can do it either way. We can go underground or we can go above ground. Above ground's a little easier to, there's no DEQ regulations, but sometimes you want to go underground for space considerations, and it's more pleasing to the neighborhood as far as being sightly and so forth. We would suggest putting in a couple of 12,000-gallon tanks, probably split them in half. That way we can run alternative fuels. And we would also have to buy some dispensers and a canopy and so forth, but pretty easy thing to do. There's actually a Washington State contract right now. We can just procure the tanks, dispensers, and you know, and all the other parts and pieces that we need, and think that would be about $600,000. I think we had a range of $600,000 to $800,000 for it.
So the reason that we wouldn't want to rely on the Shell station is the same reason that the Bureau of Transportation and others have their own fueling stations. One, we need to keep it secure. Two, in the event of emergency and a run on gas, we're the optics of us fighting, the optics and reality of us trying to cut in line in front of the public with our big rigs is problematic. We talked about a public-private partnership at Yeon site because it was on the corner. My concern about any sort of station here is that I'm worried about traffic safety. We're going to look at the best way forward, but we looked at using existing stations, and there's a variety of reasons why I rejected it.
So are we thinking that city fleet would be refueling here on a regular basis, not just in emergencies?
No.
No, and if I might just add a little bit more to the city right now owns and maintains 7 different fueling sites now, and one of the primary reasons is because we need to have that storage capacity in an emergency. And we've calculated out that we can go about 30 days given the throughput that we have right now and given our capacity. But the problem with that is that different vehicles types would be needed in an emergency. So that's just a rough estimate right now today. But as was mentioned earlier, there's really zero fueling on the west side of the river. So, and why would you put in a station? It's because we're consistently about 15-20% under that Shell station that you were referring to before, because we buy fuel in bulk through contract and then pass those savings along to the bureaus. So it's really beneficial to the city over the long haul because we actually save money because we're large enough to do that.
And it gives me an opportunity to underscore part of the presentation is this is an emergency operations staging area. This is not a Stanton Yard. This is not a daily staging area for our utilities and our public works efforts. It is an emergency staging area.
So does gas go bad if it sits in a tank for years? Do you have to occasionally use it up and top it up?
We actually do for generators. We will take the fuel out, and we have a service that will clean the fuel, and we do that.
I can tell you during the course of a couple, it takes years for it to go bad, and during the course of even a mild winter, we're sanding and de-icing or anti-icing the West Hills. I have no doubt that we'll have enough churn in the fuel tank to keep it fresh.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. Thank you.
Okay. I know a lot more about this than I ever thought I would in high school.
Okay. So a quick timeline to bring us up to date. December of 2010, Commissioner Fish notified the mayor of their intent to reassign the Sears facility back to the city. We conducted additional outreach to the Multnomah Neighborhood Association throughout January and February. And then finally in February, the Multnomah Neighborhood Association reaffirmed their initial position from 2008, acknowledging the city's proposal as their preferred use for the site. So how does the Sears facility meet or exceed the criteria we set out? Well, it's a 4-plus acre parcel that can accommodate both indoor and outdoors covered storage. It's 4.5 miles south of the downtown core. It's got easy access to both I-5 as well as other emergency transportation routes, including Barber Boulevard, Terwilliger, Capitol Highway, and 99W. It'll locate the de-icing supplies near where PBOT has to run their operations. The site is out of a floodplain, wildfire, and steep slope hazard areas. We have the ability to reuse as opposed to demolishing the buildings that are currently on the site. And then finally, in June of 2008, through FEMA, the city received a 100% public benefit conveyance, which essentially transfers the property to the city at no cost. The next few slides talk about how the site will be used by the various partners for PBOT, again, for the covered storage of their de-icing materials and equipment, maybe moving their storage, their stores capacity there, use as a training and meeting space, and, of course, their alternate incident command post. Site utilization for Water Bureau, almost identical. In this case, parking for their 6 damage assessment team trailers, and also alternate site for their incident command post. For POM, a little bit different. We like to use this facility to store a lot of our equipment for our neighborhood emergency teams, potentially serve as an emergency shelter, provide an extra ability and capacity to do net trainings using the classrooms already available in the Sears Hall, and then an alternate facility for our emergency coordination center. And then finally, as you heard from Fleet, citing another city-owned West Side fueling station. So where we are now, our next steps are to revise the reuse master plan that's been submitted through the Department of Defense. The Sears site is slated for closure by the end of September of this year. We have to then get approval from the Department of Defense and the Housing and Urban Development Agency. And then finally, we can start to phase in our utilization strategies. We know right now that at a minimum, we have to make the building ADA compliant. It currently is for the first floor, but not the second floor. We also know that we have to do some additional site improvements to include compliance with green building codes and ensuring a solid IT infrastructure and connection to the Ernie Fiber Network. So in a nutshell, that's where we are, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
I have a couple of questions, Carmen. You said that you were going to consider using one of the buildings for emergency shelter. So, I mean, for example, you might keep the gym and have that available so that if we did have inclement weather or something, we needed to provide a place for giving people shelter, we'd use that site?
Absolutely.
When we went through our community process, when it was contemplated for housing, some of the feedback we got had to do with the gym and having that be or some kind of facility there be available. Of course, we were going to tear that down and put housing, but and also a green space and a garden. Is there, when you do your master plan, does that come back to us at some point for any kind of input?
It does, and I'd like Moses is here, if you could come up. I've sought to, because of the difference between the housing path and this path, I've sought to be as crystal clear as I possibly could about the change in perspective then of this site, and because it becomes a secure facility for the storage of supplies and equipment, it does not make it impossible to have potential site for community garden or other more daily access to some of the facilities, but I've been really clear with folks to not count on that, at least not in the short term.
So I think on that point, if in the same way when we were doing our planning, we had other bureaus at the table offering opinions, right. We would just ask for the opportunity to pitch. Doesn't mean anyone's going to hit,
right.
But we'd like to be able to pitch because there was some community momentum around a garden and some things that might possibly be located on the edge, funding permitting. We just want to have a chance to pitch.
Absolutely.
And if I may, as chair of the Neighborhood Association.
You could introduce yourself.
Pardon me. My name is Moses Ross. I'm chair of the Multnomah Neighborhood Association.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. In the discussions, when the plan was presented to the Neighborhood Association, those were also some concerns that neighbors had, as far as what role they could have in involvement with the facility if the responsibility of it went back over to the city. And so I guess what I'm saying is that you have a willing partner with the Neighborhood Association to do improvements to the property to help, and you have a source of volunteers.
By the way, I just want to say that when the mayor said, would Moses come forward, given the disappointment this community's had this past week with another visitor not coming, Moses wasn't bad, Mayor.
That's so, right. I won't go on. And while you're here, if you want to provide any other comment, the Neighborhood Association and the Business Association have been, very, in the last 6 months, have been great in terms of making a time on your agenda available for us to meet with you and sort of discuss challenges and opportunities to the proposed change in use. And I want to thank you and the Business Association. Are there any other sort of introductory overall comments you'd like to make?
I did have some very Please. Brief comments on the situation. I want to first off thank you for this opportunity to speak to you as chair of the Neighborhood Association about a landmark in our community. And the turning of a new page in the esteemed history of the Multnomah neighborhood. The Sergeant First Class Jerome Sears Armory Reserve Center has been a landmark in the Multnomah neighborhood for decades. The soldiers and the staff of the facility have been a part of the Multnomah neighborhood landscape for that time and have been gracious contributors to our community, not only in the sense of security that the facility provides, but for their participation in our community by patronizing our businesses and by being a visible part of what makes the Multnomah neighborhood a unique place in this great city. Now, I refer back to the sense of security issue. The Armory continues to play a role in our neighborhood's sense of well-being, especially with the new intent for the use of the property. I personally feel, and the majority of the residents polled feel, that that the intention of using the property as a West Side staging area for emergency response is the best option. To quote the 2008 letter that our Neighborhood Association presented to the Portland City Council, the preferred applicant and land use option that this neighborhood recommends for the Sears Armory is for POEM. This direction held up under three straw polls that were taken at the end of our meeting for both specific applicant and land use. This usage preserves the existing structures and provides the broadest public benefit to our neighborhood and to the city of Portland. Emergency preparedness is vital to the well-being of the community and the city, and in the event of a large-scale natural disaster, the west side of Portland becomes especially vulnerable. Now, this option is not without its critics. Concerns of the potential site usage issues were raised at the meeting that identified unacceptable use of the site that are not in the neighborhood's best interests, and this, keep in mind, is from 2008. Those issues surround the potential for daily maintenance operations to be scheduled from the site that would generate excessive traffic and excess noise to a dominantly residential area. general maintenance or staging operations on the site are considered by the neighborhood as unacceptable that don't fit in with the neighborhood. Usage beyond emergency support do not meet the criteria. The benefits intended by the Army for relinquishing the property are not supported by the neighborhood, and this was reinforced by a motion that the neighborhood only supports this property use type if it's limited to emergency use, and that motion passed with unanimous vote. So in summary, the Multnomah Neighborhood Association and its residents are in support of the transfer of the Armory to the city to implement a west side operation staging area to ensure an effective emergency response on the west side of Portland, and my thanks to all that have brought this together, and we look forward to working with you at POEM and the city to ensure that we're on the same page in the future.
Thank you, Moses. Thanks very much. Thank you. Has anyone else signed up to testify?
Questions?
Yeah, let me just see if anyone.
No one else signed up.
Good. Go ahead.
Thank you. Are the buildings earthquake safe?
There has been an assessment done. There might need to be some additional seismic upgrades. We know the building is made of concrete foundation and concrete wall, so it's a pretty burly facility. There may need to be additional upgrades. The building was, I believe, built in 1959, 1960, which is prior to the building codes. So there may be some work that's needed to be done.
But there is there was also $1 million that was put into it.
$1 million put into it. When I looked at the assessment again, it was actually for other upgrades and not for seismic upgrades.
So we don't know how much that's going to cost and how would we pay for it?
We first don't know how much is needed yet. We don't think too much needs to be done. The assessment did indicate the building was pretty sound seismically. So I couldn't venture a guess at this
Well,
point.
The other point I want to point out is that we don't have to use the building either. The storage for room temperature is actually, those are separate buildings.
Yes.
That are more recent, that have a better seismic rating. So the sort of classroom and office space, at least initially, to get us the benefit of storage, we don't have to take that on immediately, although we will. We want to eventually.
And how about the northbound on-ramp from Multnomah Boulevard to this I-5? Is that seismically upgraded?
No, that has not been seismically upgraded. However, it is identified as one of the emergency transportation routes, which means it's on a priority for debris removal and for access if we had an event. So because it's identified as an emergency transportation route, it's already identified as being in need of clearance and repair.
Do we know
when? And also, if it were to fall down, you can reverse flow on the other lane of the street because it doesn't go over it.
But one of the criteria was to have it so that there was easy freeway access. So,
so there was not freeway access?
Well, if there's an earthquake and the Multnomah Boulevard northbound on-ramp falls down.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Barber Boulevard to get downtown. It's got multiple access.
Right.
To the downtown core.
Every site we looked at had some of this.
Right.
The location of least so-called resistance was probably the Yeon site.
Right. Right. So in other words, if the ramp collapses, there are other ways to get to the downtown core and other parts of the west side without relying on I-5.
It would have been helpful to me to have had the report that we discussed at the budget last year as far as looking at different sites, because I was expecting to have that before voting on this. I have a further question, though. How are we going to provide sidewalks, and when will that happen?
There is a sidewalk there already.
Not an entire sidewalk.
Yes. I don't have an answer for you.
So we'll chip away at it. I mean, because this is not intended to be a daily public access facility, we still need to do it and potentially also put in a light so when there is an emergency, we can get our vehicles out. Those are things that we have to chip away at. But because the price of the facility is a pretty reasonable price,
you have to consider all the costs as well as the land cost.
Yes, and I'm recommending that given that we have a facility that tomorrow we could stage supplies and we have no other option like that. Not only we could, if they give us the keys tomorrow, we could move equipment and stage supplies and it would be there for the long term. So we don't have to make any improvements if we didn't need to or want to, and we do want to. For me, that is far better of an option than I could have hoped for. Anyone else wish to testify on this matter? Any additional council discussion? Carla, would you please call the vote?
Fish?
So I am going to very enthusiastically support the resolution, but with a heavy heart. When I first joined this council and this issue came before us, we heard clearly from the community, the Multnomah Village community, they had two priorities. One was a West Side Operations Center emergency center site, and the second one was to invest in affordable housing in that community. And my council colleagues at that time in 2008 supported a housing option, and it was not without controversy. And we diligently pursued that. David Sheeran is here from the Housing Bureau, and David and I actually went to the Pentagon, probably the first and last time I'll ever go to the Pentagon, and we met with the colonel in charge of this program to lobby our case. And a tremendous amount of time and energy went into designing a mixed-use community at that site. And given the location on Multnomah Boulevard, proximity to both Hillsdale and Multnomah Village, the schools in the area, the other amenities, and the strong community support, we thought it was a great win. Regrettably, because of the downturn in the economy, because of a reduction in federal funds, because of the Housing Bureau being overstretched with lots of other programs, I notified the mayor at the end of last year that we could not proceed. And there's a certain symmetry that's at work here, Carmen, that you and I discussed before. And maybe everything has its season. But as today, as we vote on this, and I assume it'll have strong council support, for moving forward with what I know was your priority, what you would have preferred in 2008, it is the very week in which HUD came to town and gave us an $18.5 million check to begin the revitalization of Hillsdale Terrace. And so we are keeping faith with what the community asked us to do, working with our partner, now Home Forward, formerly HAP, to revitalize Hillsdale Terrace and to create a green and mixed community there at the same time that we're going to another use for this location. So maybe it was meant to be. David Sheeran and the team, thanks for all the work that you put into this and your creativity. And for the record, had we been successful on the housing option, I think the most we would have gotten is a 50% discount. So the fact that you were able to get a 100% discount on the transfer is certainly great news to our taxpayers. I want to acknowledge that as we went through our process, the good people in that neighborhood, Moses has testified, but I want to acknowledge Randy Bonilla and Mike Roach and Rick Nitti and all the people who rallied to that site, because it's a different kind of community, and they are more defined by what they support than what they oppose. And it was a pleasure working with my friends there. This seems to me to be a perfect fit, and it's a site well adapted to the use we need. And both the mayor and Commissioner Leonard have made a compelling case for why we need it there. So I will enthusiastically support. And I guess I began by saying I have a heavy heart because at one point we thought of housing at that location. But there's another sentimental comment I will share with you, which is since late 2008, at the eastern end of this site, there's been a billboard that said Nick Fish is ruining Multnomah Village. And while I've never met the gentleman who put it up.
I have a billboard downtown, too.
Yeah. Mine's a little bigger. And I've never met the gentleman who put it up, and I've never even had the occasion to knock on his door. But I suspect that after this vote, he'll have to at least change the sign.
He'll say Sam Adams is
or wrong. Or update it. I never objected, however, because I think I had second only to our two colleagues who live in that district, the highest name ID in that area. And I was reelected despite that the existence of that sign. But it will be a nostalgic thing for me when it ultimately comes down. Carmen, you've been really diligent on this. And since I've gone through it too, the process of getting the discount and going through the BRAC process is incredibly complicated. And so for you to come to us today saying you've got the green light to get a transfer at no cost is an enormous win for our city and that community. And I believe the next piece of this, which is the HUD DOD approval, is more pro forma. And for those who may wonder, have we lost any time and momentum in this, I would reassure them that it was never intended to be decommissioned until September of this year. So this process has not delayed what otherwise would have happened in any meaningful way. So I'm pleased to support this, and I want to thank everyone who worked so hard to bring it forward. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Thank you, Carmen, for working on this. This is a great site, and appreciate you and Mayor Adams' work on it. Aye.
Thank you, Commissioner. Fritz?
I think this is not the best use of this site. It's a beautiful site within walking distance of Multnomah Village. I think I would have preferred us to have held it and tried to move forward with the housing option at a later date if it couldn't be managed right at the end of last year. I am concerned about accessibility, both for pedestrians. I don't know when the sidewalk will ever be built now, whereas if it were developed in another way, we could have required the sidewalk with development and the on-ramp to I-5. And so I'm in the unusual position of disagreeing with the Multnomah Neighborhood Association and with my colleagues, and I think it's a very respectful disagreement. No.
Adams?
Well, this begins this sets out the council. I appreciate the council's, majority of the council's support, and this sets out our clear request to the federal government to turn over the site at no cost to us and to fill the gap that has been our ability to respond on the west side to emergencies, whether they be ice and snow or earthquakes. So, Carmen, I want to thank you and your team, the city attorney's office. I want to thank Warren Jimenez, who worked on this for the various iterations, options with Carmen. Thank you, Warren. And I want to thank Moses and the Neighborhood Association and Business Association for their support. Aye. 531 is approved. Can you please read the title for procurement report, item number 532?
And thanks. Accept bid of thanks, Nick. SSC Construction, Inc. for the Powell Butte Reservoir Number 2, Phase 2 project for $80,238,574.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
Well, I think some of what hasn't been discussed about the project at Powell Butte is the history of the project. This was not a project that was planned as a reaction to LT2. Quite the contrary, this project began in a master plan in 1995 that was ultimately approved in 2003 to build a second 50-million-gallon tank at Powell Butte. Most people are not aware that there exists currently a 50-million-gallon tank at Powell Butte that water from the Bull Run goes to that is then distributed to our various customers throughout the region, with the exception of Gresham and some customers that we served before Powell Butte. Sandy, who we've signed a contract with, will come on board sometime in the next few years. They will not be directly served by Powell Butte, but will have a direct stub off one of our transmission water lines. When this plan went through the land use process, there were a number of conditions that were included as part of the work with the Neighborhood Association, including a caretaker house, parking lot improvements, restroom remodel, a small interpretive center where the existing storage facility is located at, and other amenities. Those all are all part of what will happen ultimately as this part of this project. When this project was originally estimated, it was estimated to be $25 million more than what it ends up now that it will cost us. That's a savings of 22%. So aside from the obvious other issues surrounding this project, the fact is that this was a project that was planned to be built And because of the state of the economy in general, but specifically the construction industry that's coming in at $25 million cheaper for an amount that's 22% less than what we had estimated. That is a savings for ratepayers that will change as the cyclical nature of the construction industry changes and people get back to work, we will lose that competitive advantage. That all aside, I bring before you this report and turn it over to Christine Moody.
Christine Moody, you have before you the procurement report recommending a contract award to SSC Construction. Bids were received from SSC Construction of Corona, California, Graham Contracting of Seattle, Washington, Kiewit Infrastructure West Coast of Vancouver, Washington, and PCL Construction Services of Bellevue, Washington. SSC Construction was the lowest bid at $80,238,574. The Water Bureau will have on-site project management to address field issues and has developed a contractor quality control specification designed for efficient, effective work planning and to manage cost overruns. Because of the size and scope of this project and the immense amount of subcontracting opportunities at the second and third tier levels, we're using a modified good faith efforts process rather than the traditional process in which we identify divisions of work for MWS subcontracting at the time of bid. This modified process allows us to work with SSC to establish and coordinate an MWSB subcontracting outreach plan. The plan approach is similar to what we use with the construction manager general contractor method. Once the plan is complete, it will need to be accepted by the council before notice to proceed can be issued. SSC has already identified $3.7 million to MWSB firms at the first tier subcontracting level. Hand it over to Dave.
Well, I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Water Bureau, and Commissioner Leonard gave the introduction as to why we're doing this project. I don't really have anything to add. I'm more than prepared to answer questions if you have any.
So I have questions to sort of understand better. Why would this be needed? Why was this called for prior to LT2? Potential regulatory considerations. Why was it needed exactly?
The Water Bureau has been planning, and actually the site, Powell Butte, has been in the city's possession since the early 1920s, I believe. We built our first reservoir there in 1980, and there are plans eventually, as the city grows and as our storage needs increase, to have a total of 220 million gallons up at Powell Butte. So this was the second phase. Several years ago, the city was looking at building additional storage. As Commissioner Leonard said, back in 1995, the intent was to have additional storage.
Why don't we just upgrade? This is some of the conversation as part of my briefing, just to air it out. Why don't we just upgrade the Mount Tabor reservoirs? I know they're old. I know that they're seismically challenged.
You mean cover the reservoirs?
Not cover the reservoirs. What if we were to upgrade, not cover the Mount Tabor reservoirs, as opposed to building Powell Butte 2? What are the pros and cons of that? Or
then we wouldn't be in compliance with the LT2 rule.
And what's the status, what's the condition of Powell Butte 1?
Well, it's 30 years old. We would like to eventually take it offline and seismically retrofit it because it doesn't meet current seismic standards. We won't be able to do that until we have Powell Butte 2. It's not in our five-year plan, but it is on our list of things that we want to do when we're able.
Is there anything operationally that if we were to proceed with Powell Butte 2 that it would require us to take it? Does it automatically require us to proceed with the rest of the federal, so far federal, and we'll talk about state, but does doing Powell Butte 2 in and of itself operationally require further reservoir changes or upgrades?
No.
So it is a
And it is a standalone project among reservoir system changes.
Yes, if you completely discount LT2, it would be a standalone project. It is the first step of LT2 compliance. But if it was, if you didn't have LT2, no, it's nothing else would needs to follow.
Here, I have a couple questions. David, I might have asked some of these earlier, but this is where you're up front. And
okay.
I'm going to take advantage of this just to clarify some things, because I also got some letters recently, and I think there's still some confusion, and I want to try to nail down some of the key facts. Over the next 5 years, if we don't get the waivers that we've discussed here on both pieces of LT2, the reservoirs and the treatment, we're looking at about a possibility of upwards of about an 85% rate increase, correct?
On water rates, yes.
On water rates. And I asked you a question in our last hearing about what portion of that is attributable to LT2. And I believe you said that the combined cost was percentage was 25%, correct? So of the 85%,
right? Yes.
25% of that, not as a percentage, but 25% of that is LT2.
That's correct.
And I believe you said that if you broke that down even further, 15% had to do with the reservoirs and 10% had to do with treatment.
I think that's correct as well. Okay.
So we are vigorously pursuing the waiver on the treatment side, correct?
May I correct
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
The term is variance.
Excuse me.
The waiver is, there is not any such thing as a waiver.
Thank you for correcting me.
So variance is the correct term. Thank you.
So we are vigorously pursuing a variance on the treatment side, correct?
That's correct. We'll be submitting it in 2 weeks.
And if we're successful, then we could save up to 10% of that increase, up to 10% of that increase would come off if we are successful in getting the variance.
Yes, with the caveat, as I mentioned last week, that the maintenance of a variance, keeping the variance, is going to have an impact.
Fair enough. Now, on the other side of the ledger, the 15% that's attributable to the reservoirs.
Yes.
The action before us today is to approve a contract for about $80 million.
That's correct.
What portion of the 15% is reflected in the $80 million?
I think last week I cautioned you against asking me to do math in my head, so I'll caution you again. I can't tell you that today.
Well, if we're talking about a total cost of somewhere around...
I'm looking for my finance manager. Yeah.
Just in rough terms, I'll get to my point in a second. But it's a fraction of the total cost,
yes.
Right? So, with that in mind, I got a letter from one of Portland's leading investors and developers within the last day, and he said two things, and I'd like to give you a chance to respond to them. The first is that, quote, a substantial portion of the rate increase, of the 85% proposed rate increase over 5 years, is, quote, to finance the covering of existing water reservoirs. Is that accurate?
No.
Okay. And that's because you've just told me that no more than 25% of the total 85% is attributable to LT2, and of that, only about 15% is attributable to the reservoirs, right, or about a sixth?
Right.
Okay. He also goes on to say that, quote, other major cities throughout the United States have either been exempt from this requirement or have obtained a moratorium of compliance. Is that accurate?
No, it's not accurate. There is no public water system in the country that is exempt from the open reservoir requirement. They all had to have a schedule, as did we, by April 1 of 2009. I assume he is referring to New York, who is under an agreement and a requirement to cover their Hillview Reservoir, but they have an extension until 2024, I believe.
An extension of time.
Yes.
So, David, I guess finally, Commissioner Leonard has said that he is going to, in effect, petition the state to find out if there is a path that we can pursue to seek a variance. And
yes,
he's going to request guidance, notwithstanding what the governor's office has already informed your bureau. So we'll wait for that response. But I guess my question is, if the clouds part and all of a sudden, through some kind of changed circumstance, there is an opportunity to seek a variance here. How would that process impact at all the timing under which you're following here by pursuing this contract? So help me understand how the two operate. We would be seeking guidance for whether there's a variance, and if there is a path, the commissioner's made a commitment to pursue that. At the same time, you're asking us to support to approve a bid on the construction in Powell Butte. So how would they operate going forward?
I'm not entirely certain, Commissioner.
When do you plan to break ground?
We will begin on Powell Butte. We'll begin within the next several weeks. So on that, it would be fairly immediate. We're planning on beginning construction on Kelly Butte later this fall. Under the current schedule that we're supposed to comply with, and presumably that enforcement action would be taken under, we have to be done by December 31, 2015. And we should be able to complete that. But we don't have a heck of a lot of time under that.
So I guess maybe it's just such an obvious question, I've just forgotten how to just communicate. But if you proceed with what you're asking us to support, and at some point we get a variance, then what happens?
Well, we wouldn't proceed with Kelly Butte because Kelly Butte is clearly linked to LT2. Kelly Butte, we're simply upgrading Kelly Butte. And we would then probably come to you at some point and say, okay, we're going to need to invest in our reservoirs.
So I just want to put the commissioner's questions a little more pointed in your estimation, and I think after testimony, because people are waiting, I might ask the city attorney, so be warned, same question. Do we admit a certain kind of regulatory guilt by moving forward with Powell Butte 2 as it relates to our efforts at regulatory relief that we would seek from the state on secure water or covering water?
I honestly don't understand your question. Sorry.
Are we admitting something?
Are we admitting something by proceeding with Powell Butte 2 from a regulatory lens only, not? And I'll ask the city attorney that question.
I think we're just complying with the rule as it's written and as the schedule that we've agreed to with the EPA and that now the state has primacy to enforce. So,
and you
no.
And you had said earlier this was first called for in 90-something?
95. It goes, the planning goes back to 1995, yes.
For operational purposes?
Yes.
Okay. And then earlier testimony today, I want to give you a chance to respond, said that, I don't know if I'll ask the city attorney as well, that someone on our team engaged in dirty tricks with the state, that part of the rule that came out last year, we were somehow we were behind initiating that state rule. Were you
no?
Part of
the we were working with Floyd Jones and Kent and Scott and folks several years ago on getting the state statutes, the ORS change, to allow the for a variance to occur. The state didn't have language in its statutes to allow for variances. After that, the drinking water program puts together administrative rules to promulgate just that statute. I think Terry simply misspoke.